if you round up everybody that struggled with binge eating, this would probably solve 95% of the people who were struggling if they just stopped restriction. And that can look mental or physical. Physical restriction is like, I'm limiting my calories to this many calories a day, or I'm not allowing myself to have carbs. You know, I'm on the keto diet, whatever. Yeah. And then mental restriction, I've also heard of it as like described as restraint, is just that mental component of, hey, I might be allowing myself to have this physically, like I might literally be eating it, but I still feel like it's wrong. And I feel like I'm not supposed to. And that can kind of like trigger this all or nothing mentality, even just like rebel phase where we're like, F it, I'm just going to go for it then. Like I'm already eating it, so I'm just going to eat it all.
You're listening to the Imperfect PCOS podcast, where we share no BS science-backed strategies to put your PCOS into remission. I'm your host, Corey Ruth, aka the Women's Dietitian. Let's get into it.
Okay, hello. We are back on the Imperfect PCOS podcast. Today we are joined by Michelle Yates. And so funny, I was just on her podcast, so we're doing a little switcheroo here. Michelle Yates is a registered dietitian, a licensed medical nutrition therapist, and has her Master of Science in Health Psychology. Her favorite way to practice in the field of dietetics is to blend nutrition sciences with psychology to help women overcome binge eating, emotional eating, and break free from the food stress that comes as a result of frequent dieting and the all-or-nothing mentality with food. Michelle has overcome her own eating disorder and body dysmorphia, which gives her the I've been there perspective for helping women today overcome the same battles. As a side note, she also has PCOS and endometriosis, and now she lives in Nebraska with her high school sweetheart and two kiddos. Thank you so much for being here, Michelle.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh. Yes, this is such an important topic, and I'm so glad we're diving into it today. There's such a huge connection between disordered eating and PCOS. We are so much more at risk and so much more vulnerable. And I want to dive into that and the why a little bit today. But let's start. I really want to first understand your personal journey. What led you to getting into this field? What led you to kind of starting to create all these different resources for women in this space? Tell us a little bit about your own personal health journey.
Yeah, well, I describe myself as a dabbler. I dabbled in all forms of disordered eating, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, it was a little of everything.
A little bit of everything. It was really draining and took a big toll on my quality of life. So, I mean, the thing was, I was never getting to the root of my relationship with food, right? I was just constantly trying to like do all these quick fixes and make myself feel better. I had body dysmorphia for as long as I can remember. And so.
And can you define that for listeners who might not know what that is?
Yeah, body dysmorphia is essentially when you see yourself differently than you really are. There's a distorted reality. What you see in the mirror, what you see in pictures could be completely different from what reality is.
Got it.
And so for me, it was really crazy when that finally started to subside, for me to look back at pictures of myself. Even now, when I look back at pictures of myself when I was little, like I've had this for as long as I can remember. And what I see in the photo now as like a recovered individual is so different than what I thought I looked like then. It's bizarre. So
You see these jokes on social media, like, I remember thinking I was fat when I was 25, like, you know, and I'm like, oh yeah, like that does happen though.
100%. Yeah. 100%. And so like, I really wanted to lose weight so that I could get some positive feedback from people, and really wanted people's respect. And I just felt like in our culture, that was the way to get it, right? Was to have a hot body.
Bikini body.
And I was a dancer as well. And so that was like another thing too, was having that aesthetically focused environment, you know? So that didn't really help. But anyway, so when I say I dabbled, it started out with just severe restriction. And well, it didn't start out severe. It got severe. It started with me just tracking calories on my fitness pal and stuff. And then Yeah. I mean, I'm a perfectionist, so I just would like lower the calorie goal day by day, try and hit under it. And then eventually, you know, there's a point where your body can't keep up with that. And so it was more so around the time I was in college that I started to experience like loss of control eating, binge eating, maybe not clinical, but subclinical, or like emotional eating, and just having this back and forth of really wanting to be in control, but I wasn't.
Yeah.
And really it was just biology, you know, doing its job. But at the time I didn't really, I didn't have that concept of that. So it was super shameful for me because I was in school to be a dietitian. Right. And so I was like, oh my word, I can't how can I be struggling with this? But then I took a course on eating disorders and was like, you know, that kind of sounds like me. That might be what's going on here. And so that was like a big blessing to be able to be in school, be surrounded by people who had healthy relationships with food and were also healthy, right? Like for me to see that and be like, oh, it's possible to be passionate about your health and wellness, but not be obsessive.
Yes.
Was like super helpful for me. And then, I got into the whole intuitive eating side of things, and that was a long-winded answer, but it was really helpful for my recovery. So here
I am. That's great. That's so cool. It's so important. Not that it's a necessity, but it's such an added bonus to work in the space of something that you have walked through and kind of come out on the other side. Not that it's a destination and not a journey, because it totally is. But, you know, you're in a place where you can say, I get it. I've been there. I've walked through that season of my life. What was the point that you were like, I need help? What was the turning point for you to say, like, I've got to be on the other side of this because this isn't working for me? Like, what did that look like?
Yeah, there was no, I mean, I wish there was one beautiful come to Jesus moment, but
I mean, that's what I was searching for.
I wish that was fun. But I will say, sitting in that class, which was an elective, which is a bummer that dietitians, that's not just a part of the curriculum, but it's fine.
So
it's
true.
It's another episode, but sitting in that class, and I was already drawn to the field of eating disorders. So I was very like intrigued in the content and everything. And then reading through diagnostic criteria, I was like, interesting, you know, that sounds like me. And it was kind of impactful in the sense of, I want to be able to help other people with this. And so if I'm struggling, how can I help them?
Right.
And also I like, pretty soon after that, well, at the time I was in a relationship with my now husband, and then we got engaged and all of that. Like, and I was like, I don't want to be struggling with this in my marriage, or if I have kids, you know, I don't want a daughter and pass this on to her.
That's powerful.
And so, I mean, now I do, I have an almost 3-year-old daughter and a son too, but like, there's something particular about a daughter that you're like, I do not want her to feel like she's on a diet or something. You
know? So true. Yeah. That's a huge motivator. And I think it's so important for, you know, those that are listening that this resonates with, to find your why. And what that means is those are your strongest motivators, your internal motivators. That's your why. So if you're wanting to work on, you know, conquering some of your PCOS symptoms, and your why is because you want to eventually be a mom, that's powerful. Same thing, you know? And I don't know if I was talking about this with you or someone else, but when I found out that I was having a girl, it was like, I felt like I like was hit, just like hit with a brick of like all this pressure and responsibility of raising a young woman in like our fat phobic, you know, obsessed with skinniness and being thin, and like weight is attached, like your whole value is your weight. I just felt this immense amount of pressure, and I did not feel like that when I found out I was having a son. It's just so interesting and sad, honestly, that we have to even think about that, but it really is so real for so many of us. And I thank you, you know, for sharing your story. It's so important to others to know that they're not alone in that. And there are so many ways that we can help ourselves. And I really want to define, for listeners, what is emotional eating and what is binge eating and why might they happen? Like what are some reasons why those two things occur? And do they occur together? Like what's the difference?
Yeah. Really good question. So emotional eating is essentially like we're using food to cope with emotions, you know, just like you could be using anything. You could be scrolling on Instagram. You could be drinking alcohol. Like if you're trying to escape from a feeling or make it better through food, that's emotional eating. Mm-hmm. And it for sure can turn into binge eating. So binge eating is more so, it's tough because it's like the clinical criteria is kind of subjective still. It's like you're having a large amount of food in a small amount of time. And it's like, what's a large amount of food to somebody, right? But in general, it's like, okay, does the average individual in this average moment eat that much? Probably, like if you would say probably not, it might be a binge. Thanksgiving doesn't count, right? Everybody's a huge amount on Thanksgiving. Yes. That's, you know, it's not the same. It's more like, okay, it's a random Tuesday. Nobody's around. And I would say also it would be more like a binge if you feel a huge sense of shame with it. You're being really secretive about it. You can't stop thinking about food. And also some people experience storm eating. They don't even remember it. It's like there's something that comes over them. And
is that
so,
like nighttime or anytime?
Well, it can happen at any time. And nighttime eating syndrome is a thing as well, where people find themselves getting up in the middle of the night. Sometimes they don't remember it.
Wow. Like sleepwalking.
Yeah, exactly. So there, the criteria, I guess, is kind of gray a little bit, but at the same time, it's like, if you feel stressed out about food or you're constantly thinking about it, it's on your mind, you use it to cope with emotions, you're secretly eating and distressed about your relationship with food, that is a reason to get help. Like you don't need to meet a criteria, you know what I mean?
So, yeah, if it's stressful for you, that's enough.
100%. Yeah. Okay. 100%. So and the reasons behind it is typically, so with emotional eating, it's like emotions, right? We can pretty much, you know, tie that to emotions.
Right.
Which can blend into binges as well. But I think another huge reason for binge eating, and if you round up everybody that struggled with binge eating, this would probably solve 95% of the people who were struggling if they just stopped restriction. And that can look mental or physical. It could be.
Yes, let's dive into that.
Yeah. So the physical restriction is like, I'm limiting my calories to this many calories a day, or I'm not allowing myself to have carbs. You know, I'm on the keto diet, whatever, or any diet really. But, and then mental restriction, I've also heard of it as like described as restraint, is just that mental component of, hey, I might be allowing myself to have this physically, like I might literally be eating it, but I still feel like it's wrong. And I feel like I'm not supposed to. And that can kind of like trigger this all or nothing mentality, even just like rebel phase where we're like, F it, I'm just going to go for it then. Like I'm already eating it, so I'm just going to eat it all. And then, so that I would say those are the top reasons for emotional and binge eating.
There's no way around it. PCOS is complex and multifaceted. What we know about it, including how best to treat it, is constantly changing. That's why I've dedicated my life's work to helping women put their PCOS into remission. Inside my signature program, the PCOS Boss Academy, women lose weight permanently without restriction and master their most stubborn PCOS symptoms. If you're looking to get pregnant or want to be a mom in the future, my ultra-successful Get Pregnant with PCOS program supports moms-to-be every step of the way in conquering PCOS symptoms and bringing home the baby of their dreams. Plus, there's an additional weight loss mode to check into. These are all of the science-backed nutrition and lifestyle tweaks you need to improve your PCOS and change your life from a qualified healthcare provider and leading PCOS expert in the field. Ultimately, we are in control of our PCOS, and I would love to work with you inside one of my upcoming programs so you can step into the best version of yourself and start feeling like you again.
Okay, and would you say that restrictive eating, like I'm not eating sugar, I'm not eating gluten, I'm not eating dairy, I'm not eating soy, like all of these things, that can actually potentially contribute to a binge because of that. Is that where the mental restriction piece comes in? Okay.
Yeah, that's
such an interesting concept because I think, a lot of us, when we think about restriction, we think of that classic scenario of, like I'm no longer ordering pizza ever again. And that's, and that's kind of restricting that. But there's so many more components that go into that. That's so interesting.
Yeah. With this whole, I think anti-inflammatory and clean eating is super popular right now. Even that, if we get stuck in this world of, oh, gluten is bad, dairy is bad, this is inflammatory, even just that, putting any kind of label of bad or evil or wrong can trigger this rebellious mentality. And so, and that gets hard when somebody truly does need to restrict something, for a medical reason. Are genuinely celiac or dairy, lactose intolerant or whatever.
Yes, that's so true.
It can be tricky. So that's fun for me to work on with my clients is not letting a medical need become this new mental gymnastics game of trying to figure out how to have a healthy relationship with that,
Oh, that must be really complicated. Yeah, I can totally see that. Yeah, it's fun for you. Totally. So how, I want to share this story too. One of my personal examples of restriction does not work well for me. It doesn't work well for me food wise. It does not work well for me alcohol wise. It does not, I cannot put something off limits for myself. I just know that about myself. Yeah. So I want to share this story. Long ago before I became a dietitian, I saw a documentary on Netflix or a book. I think it was a documentary, Forks Over Knives, I think it was called.
Oh, classic.
Yeah. You have to be vegan and you can't have fats either. So basically I was fat-free vegan. That's the way I need to go. I lost a ton of weight, which was on one hand, I felt great about because I gained so much weight in college and this was after college and I felt so good. And that did not last long because it was horribly restrictive and my hormones, I lost my period. It was this whole thing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I avoided meat for a really long time thinking that that was the healthiest way to eat. And I remember I was doing some chef catering work and I was working for this company and this guy who was my boss. We did this whole event at this really, really fancy house in Beverly Hills. I used to live in LA. And my boss was like, oh, we have all this leftover food. Do you want to take it home? And my boyfriend at the time ate meat. So, and there was a bunch of chicken wings, buffalo chicken wings. And I was like, oh, okay. I'll take those home to him. Oh my gosh. And this was in my early 20s and there was definitely alcohol involved, but I got into those chicken wings and I hadn't eaten meat in so long at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I found myself covered in buffalo sauce, buffalo wing sauce. And I'd eaten all of the chicken secretively while my boyfriend was sleeping. And I was like, this is the weirdest feeling. What is going on? And it wasn't at that point I was underweight or I was battling anorexia or anything like that. I had just been restricting meat for so long that it got to the point. Not everyone will have the buffalo chicken moment at 2 a.m., but I did. That's why restriction does not work well for me, for Corey. But it's, that thinking about that example, I always think about that. And it's so true. It was just a physiological response. It wasn't me saying, I really want these and I'm going for it. It's just the way that our bodies can be set up for many of us. And I really want to normalize this because what happened in that moment was completely normal. It sounds, and I can laugh about it now, but it's totally normal, but it felt really scary because I felt out of control and it felt really shameful at that point. And I felt like I had broken rules by eating some chicken wings. I can't believe I'm saying that now because I eat chicken wings all the time now. But it was just crazy. So I would, anyone who's listening to this, who's going through any of this and feels like it resonates, normalize it here because this is something that your body is your barometer and your body is telling you something. Your body's giving you signs and it's really up to us to listen. And I did after that. And I went through my whole own journey, but I would love for you to give some practical tips for listeners as far as emotional eating is so common because eating is just one coping mechanism and there are so many, right? And it's something that a lot of my followers and my program members and a lot of women with PCOS struggle with. What are some tips that we can give, like for handling emotional eating? Because we eat for so many more reasons outside of hunger. You know, we eat to socialize, we eat to celebrate. What are some top tips that you give?
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to note that emotional eating in and of itself is not necessarily like a bad thing. Yeah. It's like you said, it's just another tool in the toolkit.
Right. Right.
And it can get tricky, right? When we're always using that tool to cope. Yes. And so it's one of those things where I think if it's something we're like, oh, this is bad every single time, then it just, again, we get in that like all or nothing mentality of good versus bad.
Right.
And that's not very helpful either. So just to like add that caveat for anybody that maybe needs to hear that today, but
love it. Yes.
Yeah, I think like, first of all, just, you know, tying in your story, Corey, of like, restriction for so long, make sure, the chicken wing moment, make sure, learn from that. Make sure that you're taking care of yourself physically. If you're not feeding yourself enough food, it's going to be so much harder to know if you're experiencing feelings of wanting to eat because you're actually hungry or if you have something emotional going on that needs to be coped with differently.
Yes.
So being able to work through your emotions. It's just really hard when you've got your biology screaming at you to eat, right? And so that is like really important. We need to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves physically. You don't need to get mad at yourself if you're like snacking or if you don't have willpower. You could actually just be hungry. And so learn what that looks like for you to really like satisfy your physiological needs to eat. But then secondly, I think a lot of us, I'm raising my hand here, are like, we just love to sweep things under the rug, right? And pretend like we're superwoman or robots that don't feel. Yeah. And that's not helpful. We do have feelings. Reality check, we're human.
Yes.
So we kind of need to get comfortable with sitting in our feelings and recognizing what the heck is going on with us. Otherwise, we can subconsciously turn towards coping, and food can be one of those tools if we are never really getting to the problem. I actually heard this really great analogy about, it was from a psychologist, and she was talking about like this picture of being in a pool, right? You're swimming in a pool and you've got a beach ball, and your beach ball represents your feelings. And so a lot of times what we try to do is we try to just shove our feelings down under the water. And so with this example, when we're pushing the beach ball down under the water, what is it going to do? It's going to, like, as soon as we let go of it, it's just going to pop right back up. And the more we push it down, the more it comes up. And so that's not helpful, right? When we try to shove it down and we're still physically touching those feelings. We're still involved with them, right? We're just trying to like push them away and it's not helping. And so with your emotions, it's so important that you learn, and you can work with a therapist on this if you need to, like whoever you need to, but it's so important that you accept them as a part of you and you make room for them. And like with the beach ball, if you just let the beach ball go and float around in the pool and let it coexist with you, you can acknowledge it, you can know it's there, it's a part of your environment, but it's level, right? Because it's just floating along, and it's also so you're not even touching it really. At some points you might be, but it's not this constant aggressive relationship, you know, that's up and down. So
That.
I think that's huge.
Yeah.
The last thing is like, just give yourself grace, you know, just like you would to your dog or your cat or your best friend. Like, give yourself the same amount of grace that you would give to something or someone you love, because getting stuck in shame cycles is only going to worsen your relationship with food and make this problem worse. You kind of have to like cut out of that cycle by giving yourself grace. And that's your ticket out, is like reframing your mindset to be like, you know what? I'm a human and this is normal. And I just need to like figure out what's going on here, you know?
I love that. Yeah. And that whole concept is, you know, giving ourselves grace. If we're not doing that, that sets us up for this like shame cycle and that guilt cycle. And then it's like we start the circle all over again.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. PCOS is complex and multifaceted. What we know about it, including how best to treat it, is constantly changing. That's why I've dedicated my life's work to helping women put their PCOS into remission. Inside my signature program, the PCOS Boss Academy, women lose weight permanently without restriction and master their most stubborn PCOS symptoms. If you're looking to get pregnant or want to be a mom in the future, my ultra successful Get Pregnant with PCOS program supports moms-to-be every step of the way in conquering PCOS symptoms and bringing home the baby of their dreams. Plus, there's an additional weight loss mode to check into. These are all of the science-backed nutrition and lifestyle tweaks you need to improve your PCOS and change your life from a qualified healthcare provider and leading PCOS expert in the field. Ultimately, we are in control of our PCOS, and I would love to work with you inside one of my upcoming programs so you can step into the best version of yourself and start feeling like you again.
Let's talk about emotional eating as a coping mechanism, because it is one, as you mentioned, but there are so many others out there. Are there other coping mechanisms that you recommend, or that you, if you're working with a client who is going through this and they're, you know, they're using food as some kind of comforting tool, how do you help them find other coping mechanisms? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. I mean, it's so individualistic to the person because what they're trying to cope with is going to depend on them, you know, and like whatever their lived experience is. So, I mean, really it's, you've got to find out what it is. What are we trying to cope with? Like, for example, I have a client that was struggling with binge eating every single night, and she would drink as well. And she got to a place where she recognized her husband was an ER nurse, and so he would work overnight, and she just felt so much anxiety about being home alone with the kids. And she would eat, she would turn to food, she would turn to alcohol, and her being able to recognize that was really big. But then of course, like, recognizing it is just one step. You also have to like learn how to be okay with it, and you know, beyond that. And so like, I think for her it was just, there was a variety of things that we did together, but I think her husband even changed his schedule, so that helped a lot. But she was able to, she was able to identify too that like she had been raised in a family where it was really fat phobic, and like her dad literally last week told her he noticed like that she was losing weight, and he was like, "Good."
Like, she was like, "On the show over here."
I know. She was like, so that's what I'm dealing with.
I had a father like that too. I get it.
I'm so sorry. That's
okay. He passed away. I mean, I love him obviously dearly, but you know, same thing. It's so hard.
Brutal to hear that from your dad. Like with your dad, like that's so, you want him to care for your heart, not objectify you like that. And so anyway, she deals with a lot of like internalized fat phobia too. And her like binge eating as a result of her husband being gone just made her want to binge even more because she felt shame for gaining weight and stuff. So it's just like, there's so many nuances that you have to work through. It's a lot.
Okay. So it's, it really kind of depends on that, that person's situation and what factors we can control.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So it's, it's helpful to work with someone who can help you identify, you know, those areas of opportunity rather than just trying to suss them out yourself, because you can say, instead of eating, I'm going to journal. That might not work for you. It might work for, you know, Sally over there in the corner, but journaling may not fill that void. There's other things that you need to look into changing and optimizing to fix that.
Yeah. I hear a lot from women that they like, they'll try to do like the affirmations thing, right? Like, I look in the mirror and I tell myself I'm beautiful, or I write myself sticky notes, and that can work for, like you said, Sally down the street or whoever, but for them, like, I'm talking to them because it hasn't worked, you know? So we have to take a different approach. And again, it just like, it's so dependent on what's underneath the surface. What's the why behind all of this? What do you really need to feel? What are your true emotional needs?
Interesting. Gosh, that's, it goes so deep, like deeper than we can get into here. I would love, just, I know this is like a tangent, but I'm just fascinated by this. What's like, do you have like another example of a client like that? Like of something where you identified something that you could change for them that would help this emotional eating, this binge eating issue? Like another example of that, because I think that's just so helpful to hear. Like there's hope, and anyone listening, you know, even though it does depend on your unique situation, just hearing what worked for others is, I don't know. It's like looking at meal plans. I just love it. I'm just like, ooh, that's cool. Like, I don't know. Bad analogy, but
I love that you love meal plans, because I hate meal plans. They stress
me. I know. Now I create them for a living. So
yeah,
I like it.
But no, I would say like the biggest trigger I see is just body image, you know, like women, there's so much. That's like one of the core things that I work on with my clients is body image, because that is a consistent trigger for women, especially when we're told all the time in this amazing society that glorifies like the skinniest person you can be.
Right.
It's so difficult to look in the mirror and be okay with yourself, no matter what you look like. You can still look like Kim Kardashian and probably still have things that you don't like about yourself. And so, that is the biggest thing. And that I see the most often is dissatisfaction with their body. It just kind of drives them towards food. And it's a big cycle of, again, those shame cycles of, I hate my body, so I'm going to turn to food to make myself feel better. Now, after I've eaten, I'm going to go look in the mirror to see if I feel any better. But now I feel worse because I just binge ate and I'm all bloated and I don't feel good. So I'm just going to go eat some more food. And it's just like nonstop. And so you have to cut the cycle somehow.
Do you notice there's oftentimes this correlation between these things and parents, having parents that give negative comments? Or is that a common thing? Because
almost every time.
Really? Yeah. Gosh. Okay. And this just serves as another reminder, you know, with our own, if we have kids or if we're planning on that future, really putting effort and thought into not only how you're speaking to them, obviously, but how you're speaking to yourself, because they're watching and they're listening every word, no pressure. They're listening to everything you say. My 3.5-year-old, I can 100% vouch for that statement. It's so true. And it's so important to be really, really mindful. Because that can make or break someone's personal, your child, especially if that child is a female, their personal journey with using eating as a comforting tool.
Yeah.
So for you, what does life look like as this a recovered emotional eater? You know, you went through this, you walked through this, you're out on the other side. What does it look like now? Like, what are some key differences between then and now? And so that people listening who are struggling now can understand how great, you know, it can feel to tackle this and really be at peace with it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll speak more to just being like generally a disordered eater, because I've dabbled in all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Emotionally.
Same girl.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, the best way I can describe it is like, it's like your world goes from black and white to color, you know, like everything is about food. Everything's about your body. Everything's about what you ate that day, what you're going to eat that day, what you're eating right now, what your friend's going to eat, how you look in your jeans, how you wish you looked in your jeans, like all of that. And that just takes up so much of your freaking brain space. And you don't realize it until it's gone. And it's like, now I feel like I can function at full capacity, other than the fact that I'm a mom and I always have a million things to do.
I can relate to this.
But like, I'm able to build a business of my dreams, be a stay-at-home mom, like have a healthy marriage, like all these things that I can focus on now.
Right.
My friendships, my family, like literally anything and everything I want to instead of food. Right. And so it's just like you're living your life to the fullest instead, you know?
Yeah. I can imagine it's so freeing to not feel controlled.
Yes.
In ways that, and also to know that you do have more control over how your body will, you know, feel and look, because you hold the cards, you hold the power.
Yeah.
I love it. Something that a lot of women struggle with, I think, and I can totally attest to this as well, is sort of this all or nothing mentality, this black or white like thinking. And this can be such a roadblock. And I see this every day in my practice where women, and we're perfectionists, right? A lot of, especially when with PCOS, I don't know what it is, but we're like these type A little perfectionists. And we want to do everything right. Yeah. And dietitians too. Like, oh my gosh, yeah. Dietitians too. Like, we want to be perfect. We want our A+. That's me also. But when this all or nothing mentality creeps up, it can completely derail our progress. And something that I've had to learn and something I try to teach is take the B grade. Like, take the B grade. You don't need the A+. Aim for the B, because the B will get you where you want to go without killing yourself and driving yourself nuts in the process. Yeah. So that's something that I like to teach in my practice. But what are some practical tips you can give? Because this all or nothing mindset so perfectly feeds into disordered eating patterns.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
What are some tools for women who deal with that, who struggle?
Yeah.
And I'm taking notes too.
I mean, yeah, especially if you're interested in nutrition at all, it seems to be like people are very all or nothing about it. Yeah. And I mean, it's so interesting because I feel like people that are passionate about nutrition at all, they don't have to be a dietitian. They can just be like your mother-in-law, you know?
Great example. Everyone's like, yes.
I feel like everybody thinks they are a dietitian, right? Like, they,
oh my God, yes. I always,
they read something online, they see something on Instagram from someone who's not qualified to talk about nutrition, and they just take it on like it's their freaking religion. And it's so hard. It, of course, we come up with these food rules because we're told all the time from media, like, we've got all this sensationalized, groundbreaking news about what the best thing is for your diet. And basically every time something is groundbreaking, it's completely false. And it's so frustrating. And so, like, it takes a lot of work to untangle those belief systems that we create around food, about like even just things like the Dirty Dozen. Like, really well-intentioned things can be so, they can turn into this set of rules that are so rigid and people hold on to so close-handedly that it just stresses them the F out. But when we like can untangle those belief systems and challenge them and think, where did this even come from?
Right? Like,
who is this source that I'm hearing this from? Or are they qualified, or is this evidence-based?
Exactly.
Then we can start to really enjoy all foods. And so I think that's, I mean, it's not the most tactical tool, but really just being able to challenge your beliefs around food and ask yourself good questions. Where did this come from? Who did I hear from? What is it even doing for me? Will it really derail my health goals if I have a glass of milk or a cheese stick or whatever it is, you know? Like, and then I think it's trial and error, you know, like try to eat the pizza and see what happens. Just try it. And challenge those beliefs. So
challenging those beliefs. So true. I love it. And it's so true. Like, the amount of misinformation out there is so wild. I was talking to my fiance about that. You know, he's a wildland firefighter. And so his job on the crew is, he's the sawyer, which means he is the one who's taking that chainsaw and cutting down these burning trees.
There's
only usually one or two in a crew, I think. So
that's a tough job.
Yes, it's very tough. And he's so brave. And I'm so proud of him. And, but we were talking about our jobs, and I was like, you know, if you're explaining what you do to somebody, I mean, 99% of, like, there's a chance that they have no idea what you're talking about. Right. They didn't grow up learning how to use a chainsaw on a burning tree. Right. So they can't relate. Everybody eats. Everybody eats. So everybody has an opinion about nutrition and what they should or shouldn't be eating. And yes, you see one study published where, like, N=9, and I'm like flooded with, you know, messages. Is this true? Is this accurate? I'm like, whoa, wait, let me look at the study.
There's a thousand others that say the opposite.
Right. And that's the problem. Yeah. And, you know, nutrition is an ever evolving science. So, you know, the all or nothing mentality, you know, if we're thinking in that way, and what I mean when I say that, I should have clarified this, is I'm working on, you know, healthier eating habits for my PCOS, and I'm doing all the things, I'm perfect. And then all of a sudden I go on vacation. And then I come back from vacation on Sunday, and I think about how many air quotes wrong or air quotes bad food choices I made over my weekend. And now I feel like shit and I'm not going to restart because I have no motivation. I'm a horrible person. I can't ever do anything right. And deeper we go into this cycle. So that black and white mentality, you know, challenging that, number one is like, okay, well, what are the food choices? Right. Mm-hmm. And where did we hear that those were bad? First of all, like, where did we hear that we can't ever enjoy ourselves freely on vacation? That's a belief and that's something to challenge. But that all or nothing mentality is something that I see so frequently. I don't know if you see that a lot in your practice. I would.
Oh, every single person. But it's debatably like the hardest thing to overcome because it's so deeply rooted into your beliefs and values, right? Like it really does become, I can't think of a better example than it's just like your religion. It's something that you so deeply value. And it's hard to challenge something that you value so much, but you do have to think about, is this actually, like, let's zoom out for a second. Is this actually helping me, right?
Okay, yeah,
like,
so zoom out.
If I'm binging on every single weekend because I'm eating super clean during the week, is that actually the life I want to live? And is that helping me with my other values? Like, do you value friendship, right? If you can't go to dinner with your friends because of the diet you're on, that's not supporting your other value, which is friendship and human connection and stuff. And the example with like having a daughter, you know, is the way that you're eating going to help support the value that you have of your daughter having a good relationship with food? If not, you got to challenge that, you know?
Yeah. That's so true. That's such a good way to put it too. Yeah.
It's tough though. It's tough for sure.
Oh yeah. No, I like how you likened it to religion. I've never even thought of it like that, but it's so true.
Yeah. People are so diehard about their nutrition rules, you know, and it's like, unfortunately they have to hit rock bottom in order to be okay with changing their food rules or letting go.
Which is
a bummer.
I know. Yeah. And it's, you know, sometimes they don't need to, they can post on that and that's fine. But, you know, it can be clear when it, you know, becomes an issue.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So another, you know, practical tool it sounds like is just being able to try and zoom out, zoom out of that, you know, if we're using that weekend trip example, because that's something that everyone has struggled with at some point or will. And I speak from personal experience.
Does
that weekend represent every single day of your life? No. And I love that, you know, and I always roll my eyes at this, but the 80-20 rule, you know, in dietetics, 80% of the time, eat the way you want to be eating 20% of the time. But it kind of is a helpful, you know, tool, at least in my opinion, because 80% of the time, like that, we leave room for fun and flexibility and freedom, you know, so we're not eating like garbage all day long every day and feeling sick as a result,
but we're
being flexible and, you know, we're still striving towards making choices that make us feel good. And that feeling good is what, you know, we really want to focus on the most, especially when we're working on dietary changes for something like PCOS or, you know, another kind of health condition.
Yeah.
So,
you said earlier, there's a parameter, your body is the parameter, right? And so there's a limit for any kind of food. It could be like broccoli. There's a point where you eat so much broccoli, you don't feel good. Where you eat so much ice cream, you don't feel good. And so you have to find like what works for you. And I agree, the 80-20 rule, I kind of roll my eyes too, but I'm also like, it's super helpful for some people though. Generally, if you allow foods in your life without being restrictive, but you also are mindful of like what helps you feel good physically.
Right.
And naturally, you just kind of end up in an 80-20 type of lifestyle anyway.
Yeah, that's what I found. Yeah.
It's what feels good, you know?
Yeah, totally. I love that. It's so true. Just doing this for so long, that's kind of naturally where my body has found its rhythm is kind of, you know, it's sort of that percentage, give or take.
I agree.
Well, amazing. This has been such an insightful discussion. I'm so glad that we were able to dive into some of these topics deeper. It does sound like, though, that if listeners struggle with anything that we've talked about, that there's so much work, that great work that can be done to make more progress in this area. It's definitely not something I specialize in. So tell us, like, what anything you're currently offering. How can folks find you? How do you work with clients? Give us all that spiel.
Yeah, thanks for asking. So, I mean, yeah. I'd love for you to just come and follow me on Instagram. You'll get to know me pretty quickly over there.
Awesome.
And I have my own podcast too. Yes. It's called Nourished and Free. Corey's been on it, so yes. You can go listen to her episode.
Yes.
And yeah, so I mean, what I would recommend if you are just curious about what doing this type of work looks like is just go check out my free mini course. You should be able, I'm sure at the time of you listening to this, it should be available in the link in my bio on Instagram. You can always just like message me too.
Okay.
I'll respond for sure. So, but that's a great place to start is my free mini course, and I'll walk you through what this type of a journey looks like and the hope that's awaiting you, because there is so much hope for you.
Yes.
And yeah, if you'd like, we can always work together too, or talk about working together. I offer a 16-week program. It's called Nourished and Free as well.
Cool.
Same thing as my podcast. And that's awesome. Really where we dig deep into things like emotional eating and binge eating and food stress, that all or nothing mentality. And it's truly just, I'm obsessed with it. It is the best. And I get to see so many women come out on the other side.
That's so amazing.
The world being in color, you know, and they get to enjoy life again. So.
Oh, that's so transformational. Yay. Good. So definitely check out Michelle. I'll drop all of that info in the show notes and you can check out everything she has to offer. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you, Corey. It was so good to be here.
If you like this episode, don't forget to review my podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's what keeps me running. Thanks for listening to the Imperfect PCOS podcast.